Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading Canto 4, Chapter 7, Text 21. We're going to read 22 also. Vakshasya drishritavador vanamal yudhara. Hasavaloka kalaya ramayam shavishvam. Parshva brahmad vyajana charam chamara raja hangsaha. Shvetata patra shashino parirajyamanaha. Vakshasi, on the chest, adrishrita, situated, vadho, a woman, the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, vanamali, garlanded with forest flowers, udara, beautiful. Hasa, smiling. Avaloka, glance. Kalaya, with a small part. Ramayan, pleasing. Cha, and. Vishvam, the whole world. Parshva, side. Brahmat, moving back and forth. Vyajana chamara, white yak tail hair for fanning. Rajahamsaha, swan. Shveta atapatra, shashina, with a white canopy like the moon. Upadi, above. Rajamanaha, looking beautiful. He just chanted a very nice verse. Here's the translation. Lord Vishnu looked extraordinarily beautiful because the goddess of fortune and a garland were situated on his chest. His face was beautifully decorated with a smiling attitude which can captivate the entire world, especially the devotees. Fans of white hair, chamara fans, appeared on both sides of the Lord like white swans, and the white canopy overhead looked like the moon. Very poetic, huh? Beautiful. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The smiling face of Lord Vishnu is pleasing to the whole world. Not only the devotees, but even non-devotees are attracted by such a smile. This verse nicely describes how the sun, moon, eight-petaled lotus flower, and humming black bees were represented by the fans of hair, the overhead canopy, the moving earrings on both sides of his face, and his blackish hair. Altogether accompanied by the conch shell, wheel, club, lotus flower, bow, arrows, shield, and sword in his hands. These presented a grand and beautiful audience for Lord Vishnu, who captivated all the demigods there, including Daksha and Lord Brahma. The captivating all the demigods, including Daksha and Lord Brahma, was mentioned in the previous verse, and it's spoken of again in text 22, so we'll read that. Translation. As soon as Lord Vishnu was visible, all the demigods, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, the Gandharvas, and all present there immediately offered their respectful obeisances by falling down straight before him. Purport. It appears that Lord Vishnu is the Supreme Lord, even of Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, what to speak of the demigods, Gandharvas, and ordinary living entities. It is stated in a prayer, Yad Brahma Varunendra Rudra Marutaha. All the demigods worship Lord Vishnu. Similarly, Dhyana Vastita Tadgatena Manasa Pashantiyam Yogina, which means yogis concentrate their minds on the form of Lord Vishnu. Thus, Lord Vishnu is worshipable by all the demigods, all Gandharvas, and even Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam Sada Pashyanti Surayaha. Or, Vishnu is therefore the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even though Lord Shiva was personally referred to in prayers by Lord Brahma as the Supreme, when Lord Vishnu appeared, Lord Shiva also fell prostrated before him to offer respectful obeisances. What literature is it? Anywhere in existence that in such detail describes the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I don't know of any such literature. To speak of God exists, God is great, God the Almighty, He's the Creator, and so on. These are certainly true statements. The existence of the Supreme is true. And what does the Supreme do besides creating? And what to speak of? How does he do it? But what does he do? What are his activities? Who does he associate with? What does he do with those associates? What does he look like? What are his features? Those are nice questions. And the Srimad Bhagavatam, because it's the Bhagavat Purana, it's the description of the personality of Godhead, these features are disclosed. And something that Rupa Goswami describes is that devotees have all good qualities, and one of those 26 primary qualities is a devotee is poetic. Kavi is the word. And they have to be poetic, because how do you describe something that is beyond our experience? What to speak of experiencing what is ordinarily beyond our experiencing, our experience. But how do you describe it? And you have to describe it by metaphor and simile. These are poetic devices. You want to describe the beauty of a scene in nature. It is like da-da-da-da-da-da. You can literally describe it, but poetically you can describe it also. And what to speak of something beyond. You know, we find ourselves speaking like that conventionally. How do I describe this to you? It's like, that's a metaphor. So a spiritual event or realization or the form of the Lord, the scene that has just unfolded at this sacrifice of Daksha, it's amazing. And to help share that with the audience, his readers, Vyasadeva's readers, he uses his literary devices. He's doing it so artistically and so subtly that he doesn't even say, this is like that, this other thing is like something else. And he doesn't do that. He just paints the picture that there's the moon, and there's the sun, and there's bumblebees, and there's eight-petaled lotus flower. And the sun and the moon are compared to the chamara fans. They're moving on both sides of the body of the Lord. They're like the sun. Above him, there's a white canopy, like an umbrella. Canopy. And it's white. Its whiteness is like the moon. And the moving of his earrings on both sides are like the eight-petaled lotus flower. And then his blackish hair cascading down the side, just like Kishore Kishori this morning, are like bumblebees. And on his chest, this word vidhu, it's in the verse, vakshasi adrishita vadhu. Vadhu means woman. Vraja vadhu means the cowherd damsels of Vraja. So vidhu means a female, but specifically who is at the chest of the lotus of the Supreme Personality of God. It is the goddess of fortune. And she's represented by the mark of Sri Vatsa. On the chest of the Supreme Lord. And Vanamali, he's wearing a Vana Mali. Mala is like, our beads are mala. It's like it's a string, a strand of forest flowers, as Vanamali. So it's one of Krishna's names, Vanamali. He's decorated by a garland of forest flowers. So he looked extraordinarily beautiful, enhanced by the garland of forest flowers and the goddess of fortune upon his chest. Actually, Nectar Devotion says it's the other way around. They're glorified or beautified by him. And the smiling face that was pleasing to all the devotees. But the verse specifically says, pleasing to everyone, So devotees and non-devotees alike, so pleasing. It's not just a charming smile, oh, he smiles nicely, but the radiance of his happiness was being spread to all by his smile. I remember Rupa Nuga Prabhu describing the nature of being with Srila Prabhupada, and I had the direct experience also, but he described it before I experienced it. Prabhupada, what to speak of Krishna. So Prabhupada is the spiritual master, our founder, Acharya of our International Society for Krishna Consciousness, and Rupa Nuga was describing this quality of guru. Guru means heavy. So Prabhupada was, you've seen pictures of different moods, yes? It's nice to see those different moods. And when Prabhupada was in a particular mood, it was felt by everybody in his presence. Not only by those who loved him very much, it was felt by everybody in his presence. Sometimes Prabhupada was very jolly, Rupa Nuga was describing. I remember specifically the conversation that Prabhupada would sometimes tell a Bengali joke that nobody could understand. And he would tell the joke and he would start laughing. And laughter was a body laugh, big smile, his whole body would begin laughing. And because he was so happy, the room filled with joy. And everyone began laughing. They didn't even ask Prabhupada, what was the meaning of the joke? His joyousness carried everybody. And then, in a split second, his movement could become very grave and serious, and that laughter immediately stopped, and everyone was tuned in to Srila Prabhupada's mood, because he was so spiritually powerful. After hearing that, I had one experience. So, what to speak of Krishna? I had the experience of several experiences, but one was being with Prabhupada in his room. I've shared this before. The artists, when he came to New York at that time, the whole, then it was ISKCON Press, before it became the BBT, was in New York. And when Prabhupada would come, one of the rituals was the artists would bring their paintings to show Srila Prabhupada their work. And it was, this is my offering unto you, and Prabhupada's very, very gracious acceptance of that offering. But he would do so in a variety of ways, and he would critique the art, say different things. I remember particularly, one of the paintings was a painting of Maharaj Yudhisthira after Krishna had left the planet. It was in the first canto, chapter, or part 3. Pandavas quit home. And it shows Maharaj Yudhisthira carrying a tridanda, climbing into the mountains of the Himalayas. He left this position of king and retired and ascended into the spiritual world in his self-same body. So Prabhupada looked at the painting and said, he just was silent, shook his head like no, and said, the brahmanas, they have four orders of life. They may take sannyas. So brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas. And kshatriyas have three: brahmachari, grihastha, and vanaprastha. Vaishyas have two, and a Shudra has one. Grihastha, they may live for a while. So, when kings would retire from their active duty, they wouldn't formally take sannyas, but they would vanaprastha, they would go to the forest. You know this from Priyavrata and Uttanapada and different kings. They went to the forest. So the artist was very sad. They thought, well, but Prabhupada, he renounced his faith. He said, that's okay, you can leave it. But just so that you know, Kshatriyas do not take sannyas. And in this way he was, you know, saying funny things, telling stories, Krishna stories, commenting about the devotee, just like very, very, very jolly. The room was filled with joy. One after one, the artists would come forward. And then, because I was sitting, like where you're sitting, this that far away, Prabhupada reached, as he was speaking, he just reached and pressed a buzzer that was right underneath, at the bottom of the big table, underneath the table, pressed. I didn't know what it was, but I found out shortly. It was a buzzer system so that Prabhupada's servant, who was across the hall in another room, could be notified that Prabhupada wanted him to come. So right in the middle of this joyful situation, Prabhupada's servant came in. And as he was paying obeisances, Prabhupada's voice thundered. I didn't hear what he said. I don't remember what he said. I just like shut down because it was thunder and lightning all of a sudden right in the middle of that. And then the servant paid obeisances and left. And then it was like it never happened. It was joyful and joyful. It just went right back to where it was. So I could understand several things. One of the things was Prabhupada wasn't controlled by anger. He was using anger in an appropriate way. It was like he had a sword in his sheath and he pulled the sword and showed the sword and put it back in the sheath and it was gone. He wasn't controlled by anger. He was using it for a particular purpose, whatever the situation that was going on with his personal servant. It was something that he needed, and Prabhupada knew how to use it, and he used it. And then it was gone. It was for Krishna's service only. And another was just as Rupa Nuga described, Prabhupada's moods were so contagious because he's so heavy. Like we have the description that when Dhruva Maharaj was restraining his breath by the pranayama system that he'd been taught by Narada, when he was retaining his breath, the whole universe became choked up. He's just a little boy, 6 years old. But he was so powerful that by the depression of the one toe that was touching the earth was being crushed by the weight of his six-year-old boy's toe. He became heavy, like the Supreme Lord. So a devotee, an advanced devotee, becomes very heavy in a literal as well as a figurative sense. And what to speak of the Supreme Lord? When the Supreme Lord came and he was smiling, it was contagious. Everyone was filled with joy. What to speak of that seeing the Lord, here he is smiling very, very radiantly. And they were very happy. And the next and the longer part of what Prabhupada is describing here is the relationship of those who saw him. First is the scene, and then Those that saw him, immediately they paid their obeisances. And he quotes three verses, to all of which have the same purpose. They're scriptural evidence, in addition to this verse, which is also scriptural evidence, that indicates that amongst those who are worshipped by Vedic formulas, the demigods, in the Karmakanda section of the Vedas, the demigods are worshipped. We find this concern sometimes, people that were raised in India primarily and were engaged in some deva or devi worship, they have a concern about why we place such emphasis on Krishna, or why not have other types of worship along with worship of Krishna, because that's what they're accustomed to. And they, so they want to know why. I mean, even if they know why, they often don't hear it. They want to do it anyways, but because they're accustomed to it. But the why is because the Supreme Lord is worshipped even by the demigods. And if therefore, if we worship the Supreme Lord, the demigods will also be satisfied. The benefits to be derived from worshipping the demigods is automatically fulfilled, like pouring water on the root of a tree. We don't water Tulsi by watering this leaf and that leaf and that leaf and that leaf. We don't do that. We put water on the root of Tulsi. And then all the parts of Tulsi's body are nourished. Similarly, by finding the root of all existence and placing our worship there, all the other forms of worship are automatically fulfilled. So the demigods, their position is they're controllers of universal affairs. God creates, or through his potency, creation takes place. And then the demigods are administrating the affairs of the universe. Demigods are administrators. That's the meaning. They're Ishwaras, they're controllers, but they're under the supreme control, Parama Ishwara, or Para Ishwara, either. So, there's three quotes, I'll go through them a little bit, where scriptural reference as to the relationship between the demigods and Vishnu. Here's one. Yam Brahma Varunendra Rudra Marutaha. So it's a prayer where all the demigods worship Lord Vishnu, and they're named Brahma, Varuna, Indra, Lord Shiva, the Maruts. These are personalities situated in the heavenly realm. They worship him. They worship Lord Vishnu. Another is Dhyana Vastitta Tadgatena Manasa Pashyanti Yam Yoginaha. This is taken from the last chapter of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 13. I'll read the whole translation. Sutta Goswami said, this is actually the first line. Yam Brahma Varunendra Rudra Marutaha Stuvanti Diya Stavayar. That's the first line. Sutta Goswami said, unto that personality whom Brahma, Varuna, Indra, Rudra, and the Maruts praise by chanting transcendental hymns and reciting the Vedas with all their corollaries, Padakramas and Upanishads, to whom the chanters of the Samaveda always sing. Then this one, Dhyana Vastitta, whom the perfected yogis see within their minds after fixing themselves in trance and absorbing themselves within him. That's the meaning. Whom the perfected yogis see within their minds after fixing themselves in trance and absorbing themselves within him. This is, Prabhupada would quote this often. So I'll recite the verse, the third line. Dhyana vastitta tadgatena manasa pashyanti. Pashyanti. They would see him within their hearts, fixed. Manasa pashyanti yam yoginaha. Yam is a pronoun. It's him. Or him. Unto him. He is that one. So they're offering, Sutta in this verse is offering prayers unto him, the Supreme Lord. So who all the demigods and all the perfected yogis who are engaged in practices of yoga up to the stage of perfection, which is when they're seeing that form of the Lord within their hearts. Or, from the Rig Veda, another verse is quoted, Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam Sada Pashyanti Surayaha. Again, this word Pashyanti. Pashyanti Surayaha. Sura means the demigods. There's Sura and Asura. So the demigods, the Suras, are seeing Sada means always. They're always seeing within the core of their hearts. What is it that they're seeing? Tad Vishno Paramam Padam Rig Veda. So somebody may say, oh, I only want the four Vedas, please, as scriptural reference. Okay, here's one. Rig Veda, oh, very prominent Veda. And it's in the first chapter of the Rig Veda. Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam. So the Supreme Lord Vishnu, amongst all the great personalities, including the great demigods, Suras, he is the Supreme, and his abode is supreme. Both Paramam, Padam, he and his realm are supreme amongst all. And the all, including the demigods, what to speak of us, worship him. Sada Pashyanti Surayaha. Vishnu is therefore the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then, for those of you that were attending the class and heard earlier, where, you remember where Lord Brahma came to pacify Lord Shiva? Yes? Lord Shiva was like angry, and this whole devastation thing happened. So, Lord Brahma is his father, so he's naturally concerned about his son. As he's concerned about all living entities, because they're all his, if not his direct sons, his, you know, grandchildren and great-grandchildren, great-great-great-grandchildren, we're all descendants of Lord Brahma. But he's particularly concerned about Lord Shiva in this Leela. So he comes into the forest, underneath a banyan tree, where he's surrounded by his associates, and he speaks to him. Lord Brahma is speaking to Lord Shiva and addressing him as Bhagavan. Remember that? So here, Prabhupada says, even though Lord Shiva was previously referred to in prayers by Lord Brahma as the Supreme, when Lord Vishnu appeared, Lord Shiva also fell prostrated before him to offer respectful obeisances. So, this is the, you know, who is supreme question, getting an answer. Well, but sometimes it says this and some. So, here's a very dramatic situation. One who has already been addressed by our great authority, Lord Brahma, as the Supreme, is paying his obeisances along with Lord Brahma to the Supreme. So when we offer respect, respect should be there for every living being, and when we offer respect in a very special way, that doesn't eclipse the Supreme Personality of Godhead by any means. Even they may be given great honor, as Lord Brahma did with Lord Shiva. That great personality, their greatness is, they also offer their obeisances and worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this case, the form of Lord Vishnu, who, just like the cover picture, he has his eight arms, a sword and a shield and a bow and arrows and a conch and a lotus and his disc and his club. There's the two chamras on either side. There's the white canopy above his head. It's the cover picture of the canto here, this part one. Beautiful painting. Check it out later. And on the top looks like a frame of the picture, but it, you know, could be the vimana upon which he's riding, but except it's Garuda. His earrings swinging to and fro as he's moving, and his very beautiful smile. And he's going to speak very soon, next couple of verses. But first we get, you know, the response, or how the demigods assimilate this whole experience. Any questions? Yes? Yeah. Scholars get away with, or try to get away with, saying anything. And some say like that. The if you had a chart, okay, well, here's the chart. I'll send you the chart. So there, the Vedas were divided into four, and beneath each of those four there are Upanishads that are the philosophical portion of the mantras that are chanted. Each of the four Vedas has their divisions. There's the mantras, there's the ways in which you chant the mantras, and there's the philosophical portion that explains the mantras. And there's a fourth one. I forget what the fourth one is. Brahmanas? Huh? Aranyakas? I'll do a little researching, refreshing my memory. Upanishads, Aranyakas, Brahmanas, and Samhitas. So the prayers themselves, how you pronounce the prayers, like it has to be done like in a very specific way, and there's rules for it. And the procedures of the yajna itself. And then the meaning, what's going on? So that's the Upanishads. So those that like the Karmakanda program, they pay less attention to the Upanishads. Those that like the Gyanakanda program, they pay less attention to the other ones and pay special attention to the Upanishads. And both, you know, feel their pride. We've got it. No, we've got it. And both have it and don't exactly have it. I mean, because it's Vedic, what they're doing is Vedic. But the essence and conclusion is something else. So that's a little technical, but our position is certainly that the Upanishads are as Vedic as the Brahmanas and the Samhitas and all the rest of the Vedas. They're Vedic. Okay. Yes. It's difficult to understand? Okay. Just read the purports. And become an advanced devotee. We're advised, don't try to understand the mind of a pure devotee. Don't predicate, Prabhupada expressed it that way, don't predicate the mind of a pure devotee. Because we're not there. So how can we understand? When it looked like anger, what was it? Was it really anger? So if it wasn't really anger, then what was it? Well, what's beyond, it's outside of our experience. He was serving the Lord in some way. We accept that. Then you go back into this canto and there's some other thing going on that we spent some, I remember when going over those verses together, when Lord Shiva felt something towards Daksha that wasn't so transcendental. How do we understand that? Or that's where the purports are necessary. If he's the best of all Vaishnavas and he's feeling some thing, negativity towards Daksha, you know, what's the hope for us? It's not, we don't have the capacity to go there and like, oh, what's going on? And we got to say, oh, okay, that's what's going on. Some service for the Lord is one answer, and another answer provided by our acharyas is because he's presiding over the mode of ignorance, it appears that he's sometimes influenced. And you go the other way, and then you go the other way. Well, he can't be influenced because he's Vaishnavanam Yatashambhu. But then our acharyas indicate he appears to be sometimes influenced. So don't try to enter into that space because we're not qualified. And being not qualified trying to go there, we're likely to make some offense. So don't make offense. And we can, as far as our capacity permits, we can try to understand. And then wait till we become more advanced. Under the guidance of our acharyas who are giving us these comments, their commentary. The predominant mood is service to the Lord. So whatever Lord Shiva does is for that. Even it may look otherwise. Anything else? Yes? Would they qualify for? Yes. No. It's one thing. Did you grow up like that? I did. Yeah, okay. So the prayer is basically thanks. You know, embellished. Gee, thanks. And what's going on here is not gee, thanks. It's offering. It's prepared in that consciousness. Should be. And offered in that consciousness. This is for you. And whatever are the remnants, that's prasad. But, you know, the work, the purchasing, the preparing, the offering, it's all of the same for you. And the other is polite. Gee, thanks. Transcendence is not the same as mode of goodness. It's very different. Yes. That's okay.
No, I was just wondering, like, still I notice that people, even Westerners, people who are into studying that type of literature in an academic setting, they still don't have any clear picture of what you're studying.
Sure. It's mainly for the protection of the devotees. The devotees don't get bewildered when you meet professors in Tennessee that say, oh, blah, 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 blah. Because scholars, when they read that, you know how they take it. This is the Bhakti school. This is how the Bhakti school looks at things. I'm neutral. I had that experience also. I was visiting at the University of Vermont in Burlington, way up there, almost in Canada. And one of the devotees, one of the students that I met distributing books, said, oh, our professor's teaching this right now in a world religion class. Can you want, maybe he'll let you come. So they said, go find out. So he invited me to give the class. And I started speaking, you know, this is, you know, Krishna consciousness. And he practically had a heart attack he got up and said, you know, well, I'll explain all this later, but, you know, this is the Bhakti school, you know, I'll clean up the mess he made, you know, but when you're listening to this, remember I spoke about the Bhakti school. This is the Bhakti school. This is that specimen over there. The monarch butterfly. You see those spots and the purple? And that's him. It's one of those. I'll straighten it out later. Because he was saying some, you know, the usual. The second part? Depends on who them is, or who they, you know, it depends on their position. We're not interested in debating and arguing and all that business. And depends on the individual. What's, at least in academia today, like, you know, what's acceptable is not considered fanatical, but is acceptable, as you simply say, this is my conviction. What's not acceptable is to say, your conviction is inferior, and this conviction is superior. But go back, this is my conviction, and why? This is my faith, my belief, my life, my worship, my spirituality is like this. So you can do that. That's one thing that's like cool, politically correct. You can do that. Or if the person is a, you know, is not a puffy wuffy, you can go a little bit into here's, you know, here's an understanding of the verse of Bhagavad Gita. Why, you know, sarva dharmam parityaja mamek. So that's our life, and other things are, flow from that. Or aham sarvasya pravavo matak sarvam pravartate. Or evam parampara. You know, so there's some key verses from Bhagavad Gita, depending upon the person. And then you can help them get a little bit of light in their place of darkness, which is exactly what Prabhupada did with us. Om agyana timarandasya gananjana chakshurun miritam dina tasmai. So we do, you know, we can be an instrument of Srila Prabhupada like that and give a little light. Not for the purpose of debating and defeating them in debate. I mean, if you were to say, for example, meeting that professor, yes, but let's take a look at this situation. Because he's a scholar, and he'll appreciate, oh, you know your stuff. I may not agree with your stuff, but you know your stuff. You know, in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, there's a very nice description where Brahma, the father of Lord Shiva, speaks of him as Bhagavan. Because this Daksha Yajna has just been totally decimated. He'll know about that. And then after, you know, Daksha gets restored with his head back on his head in the form of a goat, he's doing this Yajna. And what happens? Lord Vishnu comes. And Lord Shiva. And Lord Brahma. And the Gandharvas. And the Maruts. And everyone. They paid their obeisances immediately. And you know what? The Rig Veda says the same thing. It'll go, oh, you know your stuff. I don't agree with you. But, you know, respect will go to Srila Prabhupada and the followers of Srila Prabhupada because, you know, we have a difference of view, but, you know, we're not just mere sentimentalists. We've carefully considered all of this program here. Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam Sada Pashyanti Surayaha. Oh. Even the Suras. They're worshipping him as Param Padam. Tad Vishnu Param Padam Sada Pashyanti Surayaha. Hmm. Anything else? Yes? If you have the experience of what? Somebody who has misused anger. And particularly that person is one who you trust, or used to trust. It depends on the whole rest of the package. Meaning, from Bhagavad Gita, you know where I'm going, right? So if the overall characteristic, if the big picture of the personality is that they're always engaged very lovingly in Krishna's service, and here comes this other thing, this anger that's misplaced, unjustified, just like, boom! Apichet sudaracharo. But, bhajate mam ananyabhag. Sadureva samantavya. So that's, you take shelter of Krishna's words. That's how Krishna sees, so let me try to see how Krishna sees. But I have a problem seeing how Krishna sees because, you know, I was the recipient of that anger. Or somebody dear to me was the recipient of that anger. So, not so sure. But Krishna's sure. And then the next verse helps us also. The next verse, Krishna says, he personally corrects the situation. You know, the heart of that individual who did that durachar, bad behavior, or sudurachar, very bad behavior. Uncharacteristic of a Vaishnava. That's like Maharaj Parikshit. Anger. Right? What kind of Brahmana are you? He's a Brahmana who's entranced. That's the kind of Brahmana he is. You can't even receive a guest at your home? The king? You deserve a garland of snake. Dead snake. That's not Maharaj Parikshit. What did the Brahmana feel? He didn't feel, Maharaj Parikshit deserves to get cursed. What kind of Kshatriya is he? It's not just forgiving, it's looking at the big picture of the individual. What is their life? What is their essence, their being? So, just yesterday, someone forwarded to me something that I had written about this. And, you know, when we feel something towards an individual, because just look at that black spot on that white sheet. Look at that black spot. We can become mesmerized by the black spot and not see the white sheet. But if we start seeing the white sheet, we start seeing the virtuous qualities of the individual, we start contemplating the virtuous qualities of that individual, we'll find many virtuous qualities of that individual. And the contemplation on that black spot will dissipate. And, you know, the removing of that black spot is up to Krishna. That's the next verse. Krishna addresses it. Krishna doesn't just look the other way. Krishna addresses it from within. That person has a relationship with Krishna too. And provided bhajate mam ananya bhak, Krishna's going to take care of it. Otherwise, if it's not so, what's our hope? It's the hope is this uplifting, purifying influence of bhakti. The internal potency of the Supreme Lord can take even unqualified persons like ourselves or myself out of that unqualified condition and become qualified. How is that? It's mercy. Sadureva samantavya. It doesn't mean, oh, that's okay. They can just, you know, go around bashing people and it's okay. It's not okay. It's durachar is durachar. It's not okay. But that situation can be corrected by Krishna's internal potency and the well-wishing of the devotee towards that individual. Okay, well, I think we'll end on that note. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada. He died.